I have no idea what day it is, but but apparently it's time for American Hit Radio on 90.3 WHBC. I'm your host, Tom Ryan.
My lovely wife. Heidi Morales Ryan.
Exactly. Co-host Heidi Morales Ryan here as well. Hoping that we can maybe help you kill another hour in this maddening time. But we've got to be proud of ourselves for doing what we've done, because it's like we're getting a handle on this, and that's thanks to you for doing what you do. So congratulations, and I'm proud of y'all, and let's get through this, and pretty soon we're going to be back to doing the shows the way we've always done them, live in front of a microphone. Maybe we'll even take phone calls, because I'm missing everybody. I'm really missing hanging out with everybody. All right. Well, as you know, on Fridays, we call the show How Music Changed, because we like to look. We've got exactly 250 topics that we are trying to cover in depth, meant to cover nothing less than the entire history of recorded music. So that will probably take us 2.5 lifetimes to complete it, to do it correctly. But
so
that's okay.
Stay safe and make it.
Yeah. Hey, well, we're indoors and doing this. Maybe that will happen. Who knows? But this series is called Transistor Days. Transistor Days is a series essentially about pop music from the inception of really the 45 RPM record and rock and roll sort of coincided in 1955. And we're going to take this out to the end of 1969. This show catches us starting a brand new year, the dawn of 1961. We call it a new beginning because in a sense it is. At the time, nobody would have noticed, but in retrospect, 1969 started out with a few significant changes in popular music. For example, nobody could have predicted that the people responsible for Barrett Strong's song Money, which I think we just played last week, was really a brain trust that would soon change the sound and the face of popular music. Motown started to make an impression that would revolutionize pop and soul. And that began in earnest in 1961. Just as relevant, though, was the appearance of a quote-unquote girl group called the Shirelles. Yes, there had been girl groups before, but this record signified something different. It would have been near impossible to understand it at the time, but this single revolutionized pop music by giving women a voice, singing about something much deeper and more sexually relevant. Suddenly, with the trends that were kickstarted here in 1961, it felt like rock and roll might be getting a second life. It didn't feel the same as before, but since when is music beholden to history? Tongue planted firmly in cheek. All right, let's get going with this and let's talk about the opening track, which happens to be the Shirelles. Up until this point, if you listen to the past couple of shows, we've heard tracks from Fabian, Frankie Avalon, Bobby Rydell. Like, the overwhelming popularity of these performers did not go unnoticed by music publishers. In New York, a guy like Don Kirshner and his partner Al Nevins were hard at work building their publishing company, Aldon Music, with a bevy of struggling songwriters. The obvious intent was to have material available for the poster boys to sing, but Kirshner did not just want any song to be distributed through his company. He had, comparably anyway, high standards and wanted his writers to be the industry leaders. He succeeded. Neil Sedaka and Howie Greenfield came first, followed shortly by Carole King and Jerry Goffin, Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil, Ellie Greenwich and Jeff Betty, and eventually Jeff Berry, and eventually Neil Diamond. They all went on to achieve phenomenal success. Mm. Well, this song, written by the combination of Carole King and Jerry Goffin, changed the game. It is impossible to imagine a better anthem to kick off what became known as the girl group sound. The title alone poses a universal question endemic to all women, particularly to teenagers. Will you still love me tomorrow? The pre-coital time frame of the lyric is, to say the least, provocative. The song accurately portrays that maddeningly exciting but frighteningly poignant moment. Meatloaf later made a joke of it by portraying the male chauvinist perspective in Paradise by the Dashboard Light, which managed to be both pandering and selfish and even sexually juvenile all at the same time. Will You Love Me Tomorrow avoids these shortcomings because of the inherently sincere lyrics and Shirley Owens' fabulous vocals. As such, this song was the salvo shot that signaled the arrival of a feminine perspective in rock and roll music. On American at Radio, 90.3 WHBC, here are the Shirelles with Will You Love Me Tomorrow. Shirley Owens and the Shirelles with Will You Love Me Tomorrow. A daring song for its time in 1961. Did you hear it the first time? I know, Heidi, you weren't even born yet. And I, frankly, was not listening to it. I know this song as a song from the past, like everybody else, yes. I suppose. But what am I doing?
Keep on hitting stuff.
Yep, sorry. But anyway, when you hear that song now.
You're a terrible engineer. Just want you to know.
Yeah, I miss me having you at the board. There's no doubt. But I mean, that song, did it strike you that way when you first heard it? That it was a song that was that, like, of the moment, for example? Like a backseat song?
It was antiquated to me. I felt like I was probably raised more liberated in my mind. And maybe some guys might have thought that about me. Would I still love them tomorrow?
Oh, there's a good turn on it, man. Yeah, not in the 60s. Not in the early 60s anyway. No way. I mean, you know, guys definitely ruled the roost. There was no such thing as, remember, like, women's lib, even that term sounds square, old-fashioned now, you know? It's just the way that we've
developed. And yet we haven't come far enough.
No, we haven't hardly come anywhere. We, you know, right. My God, the racism issue, everything, well, you know.
I've had conversations with guys within the time frame of our own relationship, and my talking about my sexuality makes men uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's something that we're not used to. So imagine, like, there you go, Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow, a song basically, it's as though she's saying the words, you know, with her clothes undone, so to speak, you know, in the backseat of a car. Wait a minute, stop. You know, it's like I said, the Meatloaf right. song, you know?
Yeah, we're at first base, maybe second base.
This is...
Where is this going?
I need to know, does this have value or am I just being fooled here? Right. I mean, it's an amazing thing to have had that happen in 1961.
Oh.
Well, let's move on to like the next trend though. Like I said, well, we talked about the girl group thing beginning to happen. And there's no better song to do it than that Carole King song. But the other thing that was beginning to become obvious was, well, maybe not obvious, but that really reared its head here was Motown. The Sound of Young America, Hitsville, USA.
Yeah. You know?
More than any other label of its time, Motown had a profound effect on the direction of American music. Its tenacity alone was so indomitable that it remained a potent force in American music, perhaps the potent force throughout the 60s. It really might have been the most important thing that happened in the 60s. Styles came and went, but Motown stood firmly at the forefront of popular culture, absorbing and reflecting the times without flinching. Motown was about assimilation. It seamlessly combined black and white musical styles and tastes while adjusting its sound to fit the decade's overwhelming social upheavals, societal upheavals, I should say. All the while, it remained entertaining and relevant thanks mostly to president and founder Berry Gordy Jr. Let's hear the track that I wanted to play from this, actually credited to, of all, Smokey, well, actually it was not Smokey Robinson and the Miracles yet. It was just
the Miracles.
The Miracles on 90.3 WHPC.
When I became of age, my mother called me to her side. She said, son, you're growing up now. Pretty soon you'll take a bride. And then she said, just because you become a young man now, there's still some things that you don't understand now. Before you ask some girl for a hand now, keep your freedom for as long as you can now. My mama told me, you better shop around. Before you let them hold you.
story about that song, by the way, Heidi. I don't know. When this is obviously very early in Motown's history, the only hit that they had up until this point was the song Money. And Berry Gordy went to bed after recording this song with Smokey Robinson.
What?
After they recorded this song, he went to bed.
Oh.
You know, at night. Not with Smokey Robinson. And something bothered him about the track. And he woke up in the middle of the night and he realized what it was. And the record was supposed to be released that morning. He, 3 o'clock, he calls Smokey Robinson up and says, get down to the studio now. We have to make some changes. He gets Smokey Robinson and the band to come down to the studio in literally in the wee hours of the morning, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and makes them re-record the song at a slightly faster tempo and just basically changing the arrangement a little bit, and ended up with a huge hit.
Yes.
Well done, Berry Gordy. And the start of Motown, essentially, happening right there. All right, this next argument, you know, we like to play a couple of great misses in the course of our show. I was debating a couple. I was...
Like to is also debatable.
Okay. Well, it's kind of fun to do it, but I was originally going to pick a little bit on Bobby V and the song Rubber Ball because, I don't know, that song embarrasses me.
It is.
But
cheesy.
It is cheesy. But I wanted to, like, leave Bobby V alone because he was the guy that sort of ended up filling in after Buddy Holly died in the plane crash. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to Rubber Ball, you'll actually hear him, like, doing, like, a tribute, in a sense, even though it's a dopey song. There's a tribute to Buddy Holly in there. And he was also, Bob Dylan was in his band in the early years.
What?
Yeah, Bob Dylan, actually one of the kindest things Bob Dylan's ever said about anybody was that he was so happy to grace the stage with Bobby V in his early years. Hmm. He was really grateful to him. So I decided I wouldn't pick on him. Instead, I'm going to pick on a guy named Ray Peterson. It's a little bit easier. And the reason is simple. We were talking in the past couple of weeks, actually, about this new whole penchant for death songs. Everybody's always dying in rock and roll in 59, 1960.
And sad songs say so much.
Right. I have a great song that I wanted to play by Ray Peterson, but I figured I'd preface it by starting with a ridiculous death song by his called Tell Laura I Love Her on American at Radio 90.3 WHPC.
Laura and Tommy were lovers. He wanted to give her everything. Flowers, presents, and most of all, a wedding ring. He saw a sign for a stock car race. $1,000 prize, it read. He couldn't get Laura on the phone, so to her mother, Tommy said, tell Laura I love her. His car to the racing ground. He was the youngest driver there. The crowd roared as they started the race. Round the track they drove at a deadly pace. No one knows what happened that day. How his car overturned in flames. But as they pulled him from the twisted wreck, with his dying breath, they heard him say, tell Laura I love her. Tell Laura I need her. Tell Laura not to cry. My love for her will never die. Now chapel while Laura prays for her Tommy who passed away. It was just for Laura he lived and died. Alone in the chapel she can hear him cry. Tell Laura I love her.
Phrase from the ridiculous to the sublime was relevant right there. You've got it back to back.
Yeah.
Both of those tracks were by Ray Peterson. We heard Tell Laura I Love Her, the ridiculous. In fact, so bad it was not only banned in England, but they had 20,000 copies of it that they destroyed rather than let that song get airplay.
What?
I swear to God, that's what happened. They destroyed the 20,000 copies that were shipped to them because they found it so offensive. The death song, Tell Laura I Love Her. But it's followed by Corina Corina, which, now this is, I'm sure you don't know this, Heidi. That is the first production by Phil Spector after released the Teddy Bears single.
Wow.
So this is the start of his career. And it's rather auspicious because it's a beautiful arrangement of a song that dates all the way back to the 20s. So there you have it, both by Ray Peterson, which is, I guess, we're this part of our show, actually, this segment of this series actually is very free of misses other than the one we just played because there's so much I want to cover. This next track, Ray Charles. We mentioned last week how we moved to ABC Paramount. And one thing that ABC did was they gave him not only the freedom to do what he wanted, but you know the middle of the road tendency of the label actually suddenly seemed to suit Ray Charles, because he was doing stuff that was probably intended to be very middle of the road, but it ended up being transcendent as R&B music. Like his first album, this is how insipid the idea was. He put out an album that made reference, each of the songs on the album made reference to at least one of the United States, 12 songs. A lousy concept. But one of the songs was Georgia on My Mind. When? Yeah. Automatically, right? So his next album on ABC was 12 songs with girls' names in it.
Wow.
Like how insipid, what? Right? It's ridiculous. But he decided, he grabbed the theme from the movie Ruby Gentry. And back in 1953, when the movie came out, that song reached the pop charts six times. Six different people had a hit with the theme song from Ruby Gentry. In 1960, Ray Charles made them all irrelevant. We don't remember them. All that we remember is this incredible version of the song Ruby by Ray Charles on American Radio 90.3 WHPC.
They say, Ruby, you're like a dream, not always what you seem. And though my heart may break when I awake, let it be so, I only know Ruby is you. They say, Ruby, you're like a song. You just don't know right from wrong. And in your eyes I see heartaches for me. Right from the start, who stole my heart? Ruby, it's you. I hear your voice, and I must come to you.
Must come to you.
I have no choice, so what else can I do? They say, Ruby, you're like a flame. Into my life you came. And though I should be where, still I just don't care. You thrill me so, I only know, Ruby, it's you. A flame into my life you came, and though I should be where, still I don't care. You thrill me so, I only know.
She's gone.
it's a common expression, but that guy could sing the phone book.
Oh.
It would be incredible.
Yes.
Yeah, not many people remember that track, Ruby.
I didn't.
It was only a number 28 hit. So it wasn't like it was a huge hit. And after Georgia On My Mind, the reason it didn't chart highly actually was it was still competing because nobody expected Georgia On My Mind to become the big hit that it became.
Right.
And it was still on the charts when this was released.
Better song.
But
just going to say.
But Ruby's, I think it's so gorgeous just hearing Ray Charles. So tip of the hat to him on that.
Like you said, he can sing the phone book.
Right.
And it would sound great.
Speaking of people who could sing the song book. Phone book. Thank you. Benny King worked at a luncheonette in Harlem and he used to sing to the customers. He had this reputation. And he eventually, when he was old enough, he auditioned for a group called the Five Crowns. And he got the job. Then, when the original Drifters disbanded, who had a record contract on Atlantic, blah, 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 all that stuff, the Five Crowns were asked to replace them as the new, quote unquote, improved Drifters. What a break, right?
One would think.
Right. So obviously they took advantage of it. And with Benny King singing lead, they recorded There Goes My Baby.
Freddie King.
Benny King.
Oh, Benny King. Sorry.
There Goes My Baby. This Magic Moment. Save the Last Dance for Me. Now, despite the remarkable commercial success of those songs, Nelson was paid only a straight salary. So he was unable to negotiate a better deal. They wouldn't let him. He was a group member. So he decided to quit the band and begin a solo career. He changed his name to Ben E. King. He was originally Benjamin Earl Nelson.
Ha ha.
But everything else remained pretty much the same. He continued to work for Atlantic Records. Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller still handled most of the songwriting and production. And who were those guys that were singing harmony behind King on his solo records? That wouldn't be the Drifters, would it? I mean, simply put, just about the only thing differentiating Benny King records from the previous Drifters records was the artistic credit. At the time, Phil Spector, who we just heard doing Carina Carina, was serving his apprenticeship under Lieber and Stoller. He co-wrote this next song with Lieber and played a significant role in the song's production, again, kind of making Phil Spector the hero of this portion of our Transistor Days series on American Radio 90.3 WHPC. Then here is Benny King with Spanish Harlem.
It only comes out. watch her as she grows in my garden.
As I mentioned, co-written by Phil Spector.
And I was dubious as to whether he was eligible for credits.
Yeah, well, because, you know, he was such a bully later on in his career that he was able to, like, you know, I'm sure that he, you know, basically was able to force himself onto the credits of a lot of songs. But at this point, he's an apprentice.
Right.
You know,
that's amazing.
He has no power. He's working under Lieber Stoller. He's unknown. He's making himself known immediately, and this is where he gets the power, because he ends up with a hit with Corina Corina. He co-writes Spanish Harlem. It becomes huge. So, yeah, it begins to develop. But, you know, if he's got a writing credit there, I'm sure he deserves it. Speaking of writing credits, you ever hear of Charles Westover?
What?
Have you ever heard of Charles Westover?
No.
Huh. So by 1960, recording artists no longer had to be discovered. They could be invented. All it took was one appearance on American Bandstand while they lip-synced to a prefabricated recording like Chubby Checker. We talked about that last week.
Yep.
You know, material was no problem either, since the hits of the 30s and the 40s could easily be recycled and modernized. Amid this sea of posturing, Charles Westover stands out head and shoulders above many of his peers.
How so?
Well, he wasn't a manufactured product that came in a fancy box called an image. He, quite simply, was a singer-songwriter who let his material do the talking. One concession that he made to fabricating an image, though, came when he changed his name from Charles Westover to the much cooler-sounding Del Shannon.
Oh.
Other than that, he seemed content to write and perform some very original material. This track blew my mind. And I would have blown anybody's mind. I mean, when this came out, I was all of two, so I guess anything would have blown my mind. But the fact is, this song was so ahead of its time that even now, the effect of the Musitron-affected keyboard still sounds, like, remarkable. On American Radio, 90.3 WHBC, Charles Westover, a.k.a. Del Shannon, with Runaway.
As I walk along, I wonder what went wrong with our love, a love that was so strong. And as I still walk on, things we've done together while our hearts were young. I'm a walking in the rain, tears are falling and I feel a pain, a wishing you were here by me to end this misery. And I wonder, she ran away. run, 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 run away.
Del Shannon, fabulous song. I wish that he came up with something else that basically kept that going, because that song was just such an amazingly cool sound for its time. All right, Ernie Kador. Heidi, you're from New Orleans. So, you know, he was knocking around New Orleans since the early 50s looking for a connection to the big time. His break came when he signed to Joe Banaschek's newly formed Minute Records. Unlike other small regional labels, Minute had a distribution deal with a large label, Imperial, which had Fats Domino, which guaranteed national availability of his hits. More importantly, though, Minute had Alan Toussaint as the musical director. Toussaint, songwriter extraordinaire, his talents covered any number of styles. Anybody, if you study New Orleans classics, you will find constant references to the name Alan Toussaint or his mother's maiden name, Naomi Neville, which he often wrote. He used that as a credit.
A nom de plume.
He wanted to split the money up between him and his wife, so he was able to do it for tax purposes, exactly. Okay, here's a sampling of Toussaint's hits. Java, Al Hurt, All These Things, Art Neville, What Do You Want the Boy to Do? Anybody, really. Boss Gags. Ruler of My Heart, It's Raining.
Oh, great stuff.
Both by Irma Thomas. Working in the Coal Mine. Ride Your Pony. Lee Dorsey. Fortune Teller. Benny Spillman. Whipped Cream. Or the dating theme song by Herb Albert and the Tijuana Brass. And Mother-in-Law. I mean, this guy has been around. And if he didn't write it, then it's highly plausible that he produced it. On Mother-in-Law, Alan Toussaint both wrote it and produced it. Ernie was lucky to be able to sing it. He's a friend of ours in our day, hanging out at the Mother-in-Law Lounge. Tip of the hat. We miss you, Ernie. On 90.3 WHPC, here is Ernie Kadeau with Mother-in-Law.
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 Mother-in-Law. The worst person I know.
Mother-in-Law.
Mother-in-Law. Oh, she worries me so. Have a happy home sent from down below.
Mother-in-law.
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 Mother-in-law. Satan shouldn't be her name.
Mother-in-law.
Mother-in-law. To me they're about the same. Steps it right up, put me out. How could she stoop so low?
Mother-in-law.
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 That song, Ernie Kadeau, such a New Orleans classic.
Axe me.
Axed me. She axed me what I made. It's in the blood. All right, next up is the fabulous guitar player, Freddie King. You know, he was turned down like multiple times by Chess Records.
Wow.
They just they said, you sound too much like B.B. King. So he ends up auditioning and gets signed to Federal Records, which was a subsidiary label of King Records, Sid Nathan. Same label as James Brown, basically. So he goes and he starts recording with them, and he cuts an instrumental. And it ends up becoming a huge hit. It goes number 29 on the pop chart. So suddenly it doesn't matter who he sounds like when he sings. Who cares? He's like the king of the blues instrumental. I mean, this is at a time.
Good for him.
Really, exactly. You know, this is unprecedented. I mean, white audience didn't know anything about the blues at this point in time in 1961. We're neophytes. We don't know our own culture yet. And it was like kind of Freddie King who gets it onto the pop charts in 1961 with an instrumental. He follows us up with about 30 more instrumentals. He became known.
Good for him.
Exactly. Hey. Brilliant move, Freddie. Congratulations.
Sorry, all the way to the
bank. American Radio, 90.3 WHBC. Here is Freddie King with Hideaway.
You and I, all the while. Come on, Daddy, face the future. Why don't you smile? Trust in me, and I'll be worthy of you. Oh, yeah, yeah. Why don't you? You're trusting me in all you do, and have the faith I have in you. Oh, and love will see us through. If only you trust in me, yeah, yeah, yeah. Why don't you? You come to me when things go wrong. Cling to me and whoa, and I'll be strong. We can get along, we can get along. Oh, if only you trusted me.
All right, I probably just threw another R&B track at you that you probably don't know really well. I mean, we played Ray Charles' Ruby earlier, which was maybe out of left field. And there you have Etta James performing Trust in Me. Well, here's my logic.
You can't go wrong with Etta James, first of all. Or that's real logic right there.
Or Ray Charles, right? You know, obviously. But the real reason is this. You know the song At Last, mm-hmm. right? It's been sung at presidential inaugurations and everything else.
Although they didn't get Etta to sing it at the inauguration. But
Etta owns it.
It's her song.
And everybody, her version is so classic. Well, it went to number 2 on the R&B charts, but it only went up to number 47 on the Billboard Hot 100. So it doesn't qualify for our list. Every song that we're choosing has got to be top 40.
Right.
You know, that's what was the basis of my book, American Radio, and for this series that we're doing called Transistor Days. So it wasn't an AM staple.
Right.
So rather sadly, I can't play At Last. What's odd is that song, Trust in Me, was the follow-up single. And it did become a top 40 hit. So go figure that, right? So that's why I can include that. Trust in Me, it ended up going up to number 30. All right, that brings us, we've got time for one more. And it's going to be a repeat track. Well, not a repeat track, but a repeat artist. Benny King. We played earlier, of course, when we were talking about Spanish Harlem and Phil Spector and such. Now, Benny King recorded this next song at the exact same session when he recorded Spanish Harlem. Imagine being in the room on this day with, oh my God, with Phil Spector in the room and Lieber and Stoller in the room.
Wow, and a hit machine, and they probably didn't even know it.
Oh my God, this is, imagine these two songs recorded in the same day. I mean, hundreds, if not thousands of songs could take on religious inclinations simply by replacing the word baby or darling in, you know, with Lord or Jesus. But none more so than this next track. Except for King's extemporaneous pleading, this song consists entirely of spiritual connotations. And we're going to leave you with Benny King on American Radio 90.3 WHBC performing Stand By Me.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see, no, I won't be afraid. Oh, I won't be afraid. Just as long as you stand by me. So darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Oh, stand by me, stand by me. If the sky that we look upon should tumble and fall, or the mountain should crumble to the sea. I won't cry, I won't cry, no, I won't shed a tear, just as long as you stand, stand by me. And darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Oh, stand now. Stand by me. Stand by me. Stand by me, whenever you.